systems. This is based on work I've done with my advisor, Rob Lee, and collaborators from the University of Michigan, Ibu Ba, Alberto Faragi, and Leo Pandosayas in the first paper, which deals with the 11-dimensional case. And then the same set of authors minus Leo in the second paper, that's the type 2B case. So here's the plan of the talk. I'll start with motivation, trying to describe what's the kind of applications we have in mind. Then I'll move on to describe the bosonic sector of these truncations. I'll do it separately for the 11-dimensional and the type 2B case. And I'll show here, for example, how is that the holographic superconductors can be embedded in these constructions. Then in the third part, I'll describe our work in the reduction of the fermion sector and defective action and some features of defective action that might be relevant for the kind of applications we are thinking about. And then I'll finish with an outlook and some prospects. So let me start with the motivation. So recently, there's been a lot of interest in applying holographic techniques to the study of condensed matter systems. And of course, what we would like to do ultimately is to be able to describe the strong coupling regime of systems that can be engineered and studied in the lab. It's fair to say that this hasn't been achieved so far. For example, we don't have a holographic description of lattice models, such as the Howard model, or we don't have yet a holographic description of D-wave superconductors, which is particularly important as that's the symmetry that the cuprate or high TC superconductors have. But more modestly, we can still aim to describe generic properties of theories that live in the same universality class of a quantum critical point. And that's the spirit in which these holographic studies are done. Now, these efforts have been largely of a phenomenological character, where different configurations of bulk matter are devised to model different phenomena that you might have in mind. For example, abelian gauge fields in the bulk give rise to chemical potential, charge density, and magnetic field in the dual field theory. Charge scalars can model S-wave superfluids or superconductors. And non-abelian bulk gauge fields can model P-wave superconductors, for example. So one of the first examples of these applications was the so-called HHH, or H-cube, holographic superconductor of Hartnold, Herzog, and Horowitz. This is a 3+1 gravity model, so dual to a 2+1 field theory. What they did is that basically they wrote down the Higgs model in a curved spacetime. The first three terms here is just Einstein-Maxwell with a negative cosmological constant. Phi here is the charge scalar. And what's found is that below a certain critical temperature, there are Hailey black hole solutions where there's a non-trivial profile for the scalar, as first found by Gubser. So this has the interpretation of a scalar operator condensing in the dual theory. Now, in this talk, we will focus on fermions because of their relevance for condensed matter systems, such as, for example, the strongly interacting cold fermion gases, or the BCS theory of superconductivity, where fermions play a crucial role in the symmetry breaking. So far, fermions have been added to these existing holographic models in an ad hoc way. Early examples include the minimal coupling of Dirac fermions in the background of the extremal Reisner-Nordström AVS black hole. And what these authors here, the MIT group, what they did is that they computed fermion two-point functions in that background and found interesting things like Fermi surfaces, the emergence of scaling behavior in the infrared limit of these correlators, with scaling exponents of non-Fermi liquid type. They also, for certain value of the parameters, they found features resembling the strange metal region in the phase diagram of the cuprate high TC superconductors. This is the normal state close to optimal doping. Now, a problem of the single Reisner-Nordström black hole is that even though it has zero temperature, it has a finite area, a finite horizon area, so that the dual theory have a finite entropy at zero temperature, which is not a welcome feature. But by now we know that low temperature charge ADS black holes are unstable through various mechanisms. One of those is, as we've discussed, the condensation of charge scalars. And the endpoint of the evolution of these instabilities are geometries with no horizon, so that they have zero entropy at zero temperature. So, for example, Horowitz and Roberts constructed the zero temperature superconducting ground state of the H cube model, which has an domain wall character, an interpolating solution. And these authors here, Chen, Cao, and Wen, repeated the calculation of fermion two-point functions in that background. Also in that background, Faulkner et al. Studied minimally coupled Dirac fermions, but they added this interaction here where beta is the coupling, phi star is the charge scalar, zeta is a Spin-1 half fermion, and this superscript C means the charge conjugate. So notice that for such a coupling to exist, you need the scalar to have twice the charge of the fermion. And they found that the effect of this coupling is introducing stable gapped quasiparticles in the spectrum in a way reminiscent of the BCS theory. Also, groups of Roca and Talavera studied minimally coupled Dirac fermions also in a zero temperature superconducting model, again of a domain wall character. But what's interesting is that they did this with the bosonic sector obtained from a top-down model. Actually, by now we know that holographic superconductors in 2 plus 1 and 3 plus 1 boundary dimensions, so 3 plus 1 and 4 plus 1 bulk, they have been successfully embedded in string or M theory. And this has also been done for systems which are dual to physics with non-relativistic scale invariants, such as the Schrodinger and Lifshitz symmetries, both at zero and finite temperature. So the question we want to answer is, can we consistently add the fermion modes to these compactifications? And as we will discuss, the answer is yes. The dimensional reduced theories have a rich structure. There's a variety of couplings and fields. So it might be technically challenging to work with them directly from the holographic point of view. But as we'll see, there's further truncations that simplify the models. And even from bottom-up models, we can gain guidance by looking at top-down constructions. So now let me describe the bosonic sector of these truncations, starting with the 11-dimensional case. But first, I will be using some terminology, and I want to be clear about what I mean by that. So by a truncation, I mean that a certain number of modes arising in the compactification have been thrown away. If these modes are not sourced by the modes we kept, we call the truncation consistent. Or equivalently, a consistent truncation is such that I can uplift any solution of the lower dimensional theory to a solution of the higher dimensional theory we started with. For example, say that if you're compactifying from 11 dimensions down to 4, you obtain a theory with a U1 gauge field and a real scalar H with this equation of motion. Notice, for example, that here it wouldn't be consistent to set H to 0. If one do so, you end up with a constraint of F wedge F being 0 from the equation of motion of H. So this kind of examples will be important later, as we will see. Now, consistent truncations are hard to find, even when the compactification manifold is a sphere. And most of the work in Kaluza-Klein compactifications has been done by truncating to a massless sector. But in this talk, we will focus on compactifications, as I said, of 11-dimensional supergravity, on squash 7-dimensional Sasaki Einstein manifolds. I'll explain in a second what I mean by that. And also type 2B supergravity on a squash 5-dimensional Sasaki Einstein manifolds. The relevance of these models is twofold. On one hand, they retain a finite number of charge modes, so they are interesting from the supergravity point of view. But they also, from the holographic point of view, they have enough room to accommodate holographic superconductors and systems which are dual to non-relativistic theories. So this is a cartoon I draw. One can define Sasaki-Einstein manifolds from in a variety of ways. Here, I'm depicting two of them. For example, if I have a Sasaki-Einstein manifold in 2n plus 1 odd dimensions, here is this yellow disk, they are such that the metric cone constructed over them is Calabi-Yau. So in one dimension, in one higher dimension, 2n plus 2, I can write down the metric of the Calabi-Yau cone in this way, in terms of the metric on the Sasaki-Einstein. But for the purpose of this talk, it will be more useful to think about Sasaki-Einsteins as being principal U1 bundles over Kähler-Einstein spaces, which I will refer to as the Kähler-Einstein base that lives in one less dimension, 2n. J here is the Kähler form on the Kähler-Einstein base, and I can define this curly A, which is basically a gauge connection whose field strength is given by the Kähler form. And then this one form, eta here, is dual to the so-called Rib vector field, whose orbits generate the U1 action on the circle. These guys will keep appearing, so maybe it's a good idea to write down their definition here. And then I can write down the metric on the Sasaki-Einstein manifold in terms of the metric on the Kähler-Einstein base in that way. Maybe I should lift this. I don't know if it can be lifted. I should have written it there, I guess. Here I'll abstract the vision, but okay. Excuse me. So the metric ansatz in the reductions we have in mind is of this form. Here, M is the external manifold. M is the manifold where the resulting reduced theory will live. Ke is the Kähler-Einstein base. And here's the fiber direction. X are the coordinates on the external manifold, M. By WU and B are scalars. And by E here, I mean that W is adjusted in terms of U and B in such a way that the resulting theory lives in Einstein frame, in the lower dimensional theory. So the difference between these scalars U and V here is the so-called squashing modes that tells you how the fiber in the Sasaki is squashed with respect to the base. And W is proportional to a so-called breathing mode that controls the overall volume of the reduction. So, of course, the pure Sasaki-Einstein case has U and B zero, and therefore W is zero. Now, canonical examples are the 5-sphere written as a U1 bundle over CP2, or the 7-sphere written as a U1 bundle over CP3. And notice that this, when you squash, the isometry gets reduced. For example, for the 5 sphere, from spin 6 or SU4 down to SU3 times U1. And in the case of the 7 sphere, from spin 8 down to SU4 times U1. Now, what do we do with the fluxes? So the rationale behind the corresponding ansatz is that the consistency of the truncation is ensured by keeping only singlets under the structure group of the Kähler-Einstein base. So that will be the guiding principle. Now, the Kähler-Einstein base is endowed with this Kähler form, as we saw, and also a holomorphic n, 0 form, which I will call sigma, which by constructions are SUN singlets. Here I'm writing them in terms of a real tangent space basis. And as we'll see later, maybe it will be more clear later, but lifting from the Kähler-Einstein base to a Sasaki-Einstein, this form is a charged object. So we'll redefine this form omega by appending this charge to sigma. So the idea is that the answer for the fluxes consists in writing down the most general form of the given rank, such that their legs in the internal directions are spanned by eta here, dual to a red vector field, the Kähler form and omega, the holomorphic n, 0 form. Oh no, these are that's the field line. Is the orthonormal frame?
Sure. The equation after the bar in your bullet point talking about.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So what happens is that we'll describe things in terms of objects natively defined on the Kähler-Einstein base, but secretly we have more structure. We have this Sasaki. And what happens with spinors and forms is that they will have a U1 charge when you lift them to a Sasaki. It will be, I guess.
It's just the exponential of that fiber coordinate.
Exactly.
Your favorite charge, Q. Are you going to tell us Q?
Yes, I will tell you what Q is. So in the 11 dimensional case, the general SU3 singlet four form, the bosonic content of 11 dimensional supergravity is a form F4. Gondel, King, Varela, and Waldron told us this is the general answer. Here, every field other than eta, j, and omega is defined on my external manifold. So they depend on my x coordinates. So the content is that, and again, here the guiding principle is just that whenever I have legs of this form in the internal directions, I use these forms to span it. So we have a real boson H here, a charged boson X, the U1 gauge field, the graviphoton A1, a second U1 gauge field whose field strength is given by H2, and the freeform H, which I can dualize to an axiom. Now, the bosonic equations of motion will tell you that this function F in front of the volume is given in terms of the scalars in this way. This plus minus sign will be important later, that choice. And what this author's shown is that this content is consistent with the bosonic sector of n equals 2 gauge supergravity in 4 dimensions, coupled to a vector multiplet and a hypermultiplet. Now, this will be familiar for people who work on flux compactifications. Again, because we're viewing the Sasaki Seren as a U1 bundle over the 6-dimensional Kähler-Einstein base, you can reduce M theory to type 2A, and then the truncation has the structure of a 2A reduction now on a 6-dimensional manifold of SU3 structure. Generically, this will yield N equals 2 ungauged supergravity coupled to a tensor multiplet and a vector multiplet. But in this case, we have more ingredients. We have the four-form flux, the twisting of the U1 fiber, and the non-closure of the holomorphic form in this way. So these figures lead to a gauging of the four-dimensional theory. Now, if you choose that plus sign in this function f in front of the volume, the theory has an n equals 2 supersymmetric vacuum, which leads to an ABS 4 times a Saki-Saren solution, which is dual to n equals 2 superconformal field theories in 3 dimensions. A possible further truncation of that theory, by further truncation, I just mean that you do your truncation, you end up with a theory that might be too complicated, that you realize you can truncate the spectrum again in a consistent way. So a further truncation of that theory yields minimal gauge n equals 2 supergravity. Now, if you reverse the orientation in the internal manifold, picking the minus sign now in F, the resulting theory has a non-supersymmetric ABS vacuum, which leads to a class of solutions called skew-whipped ABS 4 times Saki-Saren. And in this case, there's a further truncation that yields the so-called M-theory holographic superconductor. Again, this is Einstein-Maxwell with negative cosmological constant. The cosmological constant is hidden here. And this charge scalar X, which is minimally coupled to the gauge field, and it has some complicated potential also. This author shown numerically that this has Hayley black hole solutions pretty much like the ones in the HHH model.
In your skew-whiff version, do we know very much about the dual theory? Meaning the CFT?
I'm not sure, honestly, but
let me think. That's fine.
I would be tempted to say no because we don't have supersymmetry, but I might be wrong. I don't think there has been the CFT has been identified, but I'm trying to remember if there's something else that's known about them. But I don't quite know. True. What I believe I've seen, but I might be wrong about this, is that in these zero temperature domain wall solutions, one end of the evolution, say in the infrared, is a deformation of this skew wave solution. But don't take my word for that, so I'm not sure. So a slight caveat here is that precisely for the reason we described in that earlier example, where there was a real scalar set to zero, is that you end up with a constraint. So technically, this is not, in the strict sense, this is not a consistent truncation. You have this constraint f, which f equals to zero, so you can consider, say, electrically charged black holes or magnetically charged black holes, but not both. You won't have bionic black holes. Now, excuse me. In type 2D, the story is the same. There are more forms, obviously. There's the self-dual Ramon-Ramon 5 form, the Ramon-Ramon 3 form, and the Neve-Schwarz 3 form. But again, the rationale is the same. You just have to write down the most general ansatz with the legs on the internal directions spanned by your SUN singlets, omega, j, and eta. So, Donlett and Varela write down this is the most general expression. Now, the content here, as was shown simultaneously by various groups, is that of n equals 4 gauge supergravity in 5 dimensions, coupled to 2 vector multiplets. Now, this theory has an ABS 5 vacuum that breaks n equals 4 down to n equals 2 spontaneously, and admits to a class of ABS 5 times the Saki-5 solutions, which this time are dual to n equals 1 superconformal field theories in 4 dimensions. And it also has an ABS 5 vacuum, which preserves non-supersymmetry and was first found by Romans. Now, again, a further truncation of this theory yields the type 2E holographic superconductor. The action is similar to M-theory superconductor, but you have a Chan-Simons term now. And why here is the charge scalar now, again, minimally coupled to the gauge field and with a complicated potential.
So is there a similar constraint here, the one that you mentioned in F, in F theory when you do the truncations? So this is really a consistent
problem. Yes. This one is. Now I'll describe our work in reducing the fairness sector in these truncations and what we found. So as we discussed, we have to find a basis of SUN singlet spinners to expand the various Fermion fields. Now, in general, the Kaler-Einstein base might not admit a spin structure, the canonical example being CP2. But in Kaler, I can always define a spin C bundle, which basically means that my spinners will carry U1 charge. Now, of central importance for us will be the so-called gauge covariantly constant spinners, epsilon. These are sections of this spin C bundle that satisfy this equation. Here, now let's the connection on the Kaler-Einstein base is the electrical charge. And this curly A, this connection, is the one whose field strength is the Kaler form on the Kaler-Einstein base. Now, from this equation, an integrability condition follows that allows you to identify the U1 charge operator acting on spinner states as J slash, slash the Kaler form. And that's how you can compute the charges of various things, including that form we saw before. So in general, this operator has two SUN singlet eigenvalues with maximum charge given here in terms of the dimension. I call them epsilon plus and minus, and they are charge conjugates of one another. For example, if I was in the case where I have a six-dimensional Kaler-Einstein base, these two guys are the singlets in the decomposition of the 4 plus 4 bar of spin 6 under SU3. Now, in the absence of squashing, when I append the U1 charge to these gauge coordinately constant spinners, the resulting guy is a Killing spinner of the Sasaki-Einstein manifold. So it's, from this point of view, it's also natural to use them when you are constructing the reduction answer for the squash case. Now, the fermion content of 11-dimensional supergravity is a Majorana-Levitino. Here, A are the directions on the external manifold where the resulting theory will live with coordinates x. Alpha and alpha bar are complex indices on the Kaler-Einstein base with coordinates y. And f is the direction of the U1 fiber with coordinates chi. Notice that I'm using as my basis these epsilon plus and minus, the gauge coordinately constant spinners. And because the Gravitino is Majorana, is that the coefficient here is actually the charge conjugate here, and the same thing here. So these fields are not independent. So all in all, we have the five-dimensional Dirac Gravitino, psi A, and two spin 1/2 Dirac fields, lambda and phi here. Now, as usual, one needs to rescale and combine these modes to have diagonal kinetic terms. So here, these are the combinations that do a trick. I realize this is poor notation. This eta is obviously not the same as the one-form eta. It's a name for the spinner, so I apologize for that. So what you find now is that when you reduce the 11-dimensional SUSY variations, you can identify eta with the Gaijino and C with the Hyperino. Now, in the same way, reducing now the equations of motion, you can construct the effective four-dimensional action. We did this to quadratic order in the fermions. We didn't compute the quartic terms. But what you find is that it fits in the general form of n equals 2 gauge supergravity, as given by many authors. We found this paper particularly useful. Now, the full action is complicated. It has a lot of structure. But here, I'll discuss just some of the features that are probably relevant for holography. So let me put it there on the background. This is just the first chunk of the action. It's like half. The first feature is that the interactions have the form. There's interactions of the form psi bar psi, where psi is any of my fermions, and also interactions of the form psi bar psi charge conjugate that I will loosely refer to as Majorana couplings. So here, this first chunk are the interactions of the form psi-bar psi. For example, now, through the breathing and squashing modes, these penguin half fields, when I expand this on a given background, they will acquire masses and charge and gauge couplings. In the same way, there's a strong mixture between the gravitino here, zeta A, and the spin 1/2 fields, and that's how the gravitino acquire mass in a SUSY breaking vacua. We also have generalized polycouplings of the spin 1/2 fields to a field strength, F and H2. But perhaps more importantly for us is the coupling to the charge scalars, which is in the other piece in interactions of the form psi bar, psi charge conjugate. For example, we have exactly the kind of terms here for the gaugino that the authors I mentioned previously introduced by hand and when they found these gapped quasi-particles. So we have those terms generically, but we also have terms like this that haven't been considered, derivative couplings to a charge scalar that might be important in situations where there's some anisotropy of the in the dual field theory. Now I'll move on to describe the type 2B case, which works pretty much the same way. So the fermion content of type 2B is a chiral gravitino and a chiral dilatino of opposite chirality. The ansatz, again here, A are directions on the external manifold with coordinates x, alpha and alpha bar, directions on the Kähler-Einstein base with coordinates y, and f, the direction of the fiber with coordinate chi. Now, there's no, this u minus and u plus here are just bookkeeping spinors to keep track of the chiralities, so they're not important here. Again, I'm using the epsilon plus and minus as my basis of singlets to expand all these modes. But since there's no reality condition now on these fields, these plus and minus, the coefficients of the charge conjugate spinors, are not related to one another. They are just independent direct spinors. For example, lambda plus and minus are just independent spin 1/2 fermions in 5 dimensions. So as before, you need to recombine and rescale these modes to have diagonal kinetic terms. And when you look at the SUSY variations now and match with the general structure of n equals 4 gauge supergravity, again, given my many authors, here are some useful references, you identify eta plus and minus as the fermions on the n equals 4 gravity multiplet. Now, the right language to describe, or the smart language to describe these fermions in n equals 4 supergravity is in terms of symplectic Majorana spinors, because those make the action of the R-symmetry manifest, the USP4 R-symmetry. Here, we didn't find really any advantage in doing so for the kind of applications we have in mind, but you can fit them in the corresponding structure. So the action in this case is much longer than the one in the M-theory case. It would take me like 5 slides to show it here. But again, there are further truncations that you can do. One of them, perhaps the simplest, yields minimal gauge n equals 4 supergravity in 5 dimensions. And a second further truncation is that of the type 2B holographic superconductor. And quite interestingly, conductor further truncation, we did find a further truncation of the fermion sector, which retains a single spin 1/2 mode. We couldn't do this in the M-theory case where the gravitino, we asked whether there was a further truncation where we can get rid of the gravitino and preserve just spin 1/2 modes, but we didn't find one. They are really entangled together. But here, you have this model. So you get masses for the spin 1/2 field, this polycoupling to the field strength, and also a coupling to a charge scalar current, and these complicated nonlinearities here. But this is a model that can be analyzed holographically. No, generically, it has the same structure of the other Lagrangian in the sense that there's a lot of interactions of the form psi-bar, psi-charge conjugate. It's just that in this particular further truncation, yes, and you don't have those kind of couplings. But if you look at the full action, there's a bunch of couplings of that form. So generically, they are there, also in this case.
Sorry. Oh, yeah.
Additional ABS 5 part. At this point, this is quite general. We're just saying that there's some asymptotically ABS 5 space there. It might be pure ABS, it might be a black hole with a gauge field and chemical potential. So whether you can drop or not those fields is not related to what was your theory in that external manifold yet, but is related to the structure of the equations of motion as derived from the higher dimensional theory. So you look at the equations of motion, you turn off these modes, and you see if you have any constraint on the modes you get. And in this case, you don't, so. Yes. So let me finish with an outlook. We'll construct top-down models that describe the coupling of fermions to certain bosonic truncations that are relevant for ABS CMT applications. In the case of the type 2B superconductor, we did find a simple further truncation of the fermion sector that keeps a single spin one half mode. But in general, if one takes into account the mixing of the spin one half fermions with the gravitinon, that might have interesting effects from the point of view of holography. Now, also our effective Lagrangians can provide guidance for bottom-up models, for example, new couplings that may be relevant for phenomenology, such as the polycouplings. My advisor, Rob, he talked here at Perimeter about the effect of such a coupling on the background of the extremal rising and Nordstrom black hole. Right now, we are studying that on one of these broken faces where there's a condensate at zero temperature. You can also have derivative couplings to the charge scalars, as we saw, that haven't been considered so far. As I told you before, these truncations are quite general. Not only contain these holographic superconductors as further truncations, but they contain systems dual to theories with non-relativistic scaling variants, such as the Schrödinger and Lipschitz black holes, or also at zero temperature, with and without charge. So this can be used to study, say, correlators of fermions in the theories dual to the Schrödinger field theories. Also, one would consider the four fermion terms, which are probably relevant as they can induce in the bulk effects like the Cooper pairing and such. So thank you very much.
No, let's thank Quinn again.
Thank you.